it didn't seem to matter which straw I drew, I was first. And how do I follow Horton? That was a very interesting story. Our topic this month has been stewardship. So as an old retired teacher, my first thought was, what does stewardship mean? So I went to the dictionary, opened it up, I found the word steward. And it said, an officer or employee in a large family or a large estate to manage the domestic concerns, supervise servants, collect rents or income, keep accounts. That was very fitting. An administrator, supervisor, or manager, a person employed as a worker on a ship or a plane. Stewardship was not mentioned. It was an add-on at the bottom as a compound word, a noun, stewardship. That was the second edition of Webster's New Collegiate Dictionary, 1955. Well, let's try one a little newer. So I got the 10th edition of Webster's New Collegiate Dictionary, 1995. Said basically the same thing. Nothing much changed, except the word was a line item. It wasn't an add-on. So you're thinking out there, well, why in the world didn't she get online and go to the internet? Because there's bound to be a lot of stuff there. And I did. And there was more information there than I could read in a year. So I narrowed it down to Christian stewardship. And there was even more. How do you come to a concise definition of stewardship? Well, with the chance of aging myself, I'm going to return to my childhood. Back in the 1930s, late 30s and early 40s, Dow Chemical Company was building a plant in a sleepy little town of Freeport, south of Houston. And as different sections of this plant were completed, workers were transferred to this sleepy little town of Freeport to work in that plant. And in 1942, my father was transferred to that sleepy little Freeport town. And as is often the case when you move to somewhere new, you find that you don't have what you had when you left that other place. And as happened in Freeport, South Texas, there was no Lutheran church. None. So a group of very concerned people got together, got a hold of the powers that be of the church at the time, and got permission to build a church. Now, there weren't very many of these people at the time, so it was not an easy task. They were able to secure an army barracks quite cheap, purchase some property, and that army barracks was placed on that property. The people pulled out their hammers and their saws and their electrical skills and their plumbing skills, and they made a sanctuary. They built a pulpit, they built an altar, they built the lectern. The ladies made all the altar cloths and the things that went with it. We had a pastor and we had a church. But as this building was going on, the community was seeing what was happening, and a lot of these people came and joined. They helped out, and in turn, wound up joining the church. Early 1943, that church opened. He had a pastor, a pump organ, not an electrical one, and services began. And as we have heard before, build it and they will come, they came. The church grew. Sunday school space was needed. So the hammers and the saws and the workers came back, and an addition was placed on the back of that building. It was a big square building section divided by pipe going across north and south, east and west, and the ladies got sheets and curtain hangers, and they strung those sheets across the pipe. When closed to the center, four classrooms. Open concept, but it worked. Sunday school had a contribution of a piano, so Sunday school had an opening. And in that opening, we had offering. We were just so eager at that time as children to be ushers. We wanted to be big ushers in the big church. So we practiced as children. We had our wooden offering plate. And as that offering plate was passed back and forth, we sang a little song. Hear the pennies dropping. Listen as they fall. Every one for Jesus, he will get them all. We were taught to give. That was part of our routine on Sunday morning. When we finished Sunday school, our parents were in the sanctuary for their Sunday school section, and we would march in singing Onward Christian Soldiers, marching as to war with the cross of Jesus going on before. That song could have been Onward Christian Stewards, but it was Onward Christian Soldiers. That little church in its form lasted 20 years, and they definitely outgrew it. It was torn down, and a new church was built in its place. My husband and I were one of the first couples to be married in that new church. And we started our lives always going to church. And our first church was Faith Lutheran Church on Bel Air Boulevard. And our daughter Judy was baptized in that church. We built a home in Pearland. Moving to Pearland, we found the same thing happening. What we left, we didn't have in Pearland. There was no Lutheran church. So we went to the one in Alvin, and shortly after we had started going there, the pastor, Luther Olke, I love that name. Is that not a Lutheran pastor's name, Luther Olke? Some of you may know him. Came to us and said, I understand that there is a mission church starting in Pearland. Could we give your name and number as contact people? And we said yes. So a band of Christian soldiers in Pearland manned together, and there is a church in Pearland, St. Stephen Lutheran Church. A few years later, we moved to Conroe. And would you believe? No Lutheran church. There was a Missouri Synod Lutheran church on the north side of town. And there was a little church across the freeway, the corner of Robinson Road in Patsy, I believe it is. Its name was Lord of Life. It was the beginnings of this church. And we attended there. Shortly, we saw an article in the newspaper about a mission church coming to Conroe. Here's the telephone number, where we're meeting, so forth and so on. So we joined. We joined that band of Christian soldiers, and again, there was a new church, Grace Lutheran Church in Conroe. Mission work, stewardship, time, talent, contributions. We need this. Here it is. Probably the most wonderful experiences that I have ever had or my husband has ever had working in Mission Church. Stewardship, you betcha. Big time stewardship. We were all doing the work of God, doing His work with our hands.
Good morning, again. Could I see a show of hands of anyone that's been to India? India, okay. Not many. Okay. Several years ago, my job took me there for a commissioning job. It was offshore Bombay, when Bombay was Bombay. And I got to tell you, the country is beautiful, the many exciting things to see, the people are beautiful. But at this offshore rig I was on, I was hung there against my will, and anyway, at night it was being commissioned, and I'm sitting there and I'm looking out over the ocean with the beautiful clear sky and the Black Sea. And there are flares from close to far away, just scattered out. It was actually beautiful. Got me to thinking about things, especially things that happened to me when I arrived there. A few days earlier, I arrived in Bombay, and it was 2 or 3 days before I could go out on the rig. And a couple of friends that I'd run into there, we took a tour. Now, this wasn't your ordinary tour. We wanted to see what was really going on there. We went to the area where the poor people live, and it was just fraught with beggars. Now, begging is a way of life for some of these people, sadly enough. They would go so far in some cases to maim their children to make them better beggars. That's how bad it was. And driving around in this little taxi for miles and miles and miles, there was people living in boxes, cardboard boxes, wooden boxes. A few of them had boats over their head held up by limbs. And what happens is when the monsoon comes, it all gets washed away. The government didn't have any idea how many people were in this condition. They had no idea how many thousands of people died from the monsoon every year. And what I'm getting into is that very same night in the hotel, I'm watching the only American speaking TV channel. And there was a panel there and a bishop there. And one of the questions asked the bishop was, here are these people and given pretty well the same conditions I saw, and said they have no idea how many people die from this. They don't have any idea when their next meal's coming from. How in the world do they survive? The bishop's answer was, by the grace of God. By the grace of God. That just hit me like a ton of bricks. That's why out on that rig I had time to contemplate this. This is the same grace of God that gives me everything I have and everything you have. All of our abundance. So that brought a whole new light to me on what the grace of God really means. And if you hadn't thought about it from the lesser end, then it's more important. Now, back to my family, my father and my grandfather, they all lived through the Great Depression and World War II. Totally different set of values than I have, or most of us have, some of you may remember. Now, my father and my aunts and uncles, they all survived the war, except for one uncle who died on the USS Juno. They were at Omaha Beach. They were at, my dad was in Iwo Jima. So I can't relate to that set of values that they had, except as life went on and I think back on what happened. After World War II, my father had, in my estimation, although they'll tell me that's not true, I had nothing as far as I was concerned. Absolutely nothing. They lived at my grandmother's house until my dad got a job. But they were avid tithers. For everything and anything they had, they tithed it. Also, being Southern Baptist might have something to do with it. But they were avid tithers. And my dad, he got a job finally at a company called Duncan Coffee Company. You may remember Maryland Club Coffee. Well, he was driving a truck, and I went on him on a few time, deliveries. But anyway, sometimes they couldn't pay him, and they would give him stock instead. And all bonuses would be in stock. Well, a few years later, Coca-Cola Company buys Dunkin' Coffee Company. And my father was one of the largest shareholders outside the family. And as it would have it, Coca-Cola says, "You got all of this, we have..." So they made him a vice president in charge of transportation. He didn't like that. He didn't like the office thing. So now here I am looking back and say, why in the world would you sell all this Coca-Cola stock? But he did, and he bought a supply company. And we were wholesale distributors for Kerr McGee and several other companies for South Texas and the Houston area. It served us well. We paid everything off we ever had. And I asked my dad, says, "Would y'all want to move to a bigger house?" He says, "No, son, we have all we need." Well, of course, my brother and I went on to bigger houses, but they never ever lived in anything bigger than a 2-bedroom, single bath house. When my father died, and now my mother's in a nursing home in Conroe. But the point is, they believed in avid tithing. And as another little point, folks, the 10% magic number that's been in the Bible for all these years, that's not the maximum. That's the minimum, okay? And I can remember one Sunday in the Baptist church, my father and several other men came up, and they put them in front of the church because they had said that they were going to now give 15% instead of 10%. Made a big deal out of it. Well, it was a big deal to them and to me and to all of us because most of the church went to 15% when things got good. But what made me think 10%, most of us sit around and think, 10%, well, I reached it, hallelujah, let's celebrate, and I'm through. Well, that's only the beginning. It is the minimum, folks. We have so much to do in this world. Christianity is under the biggest fight it's had ever in history. And the only way to help that is to keep the Christianity going, teach our children, keep everything going in a way that we can fight this anti-Christian in the world today. So what we do now is we thank the God for our blessings, all that we have total abundance compared to what the elder people here and we can all remember. So I have everything that I have, and you have everything that you have by the grace of God. And I ask you to do one other thing, just for kicks, for yourself, and to evaluate yourself. We should constantly be evaluating ourselves. That's to take all your giving to charities, like in your income tax charities, including the church, and see what percentage of that in your income is, and just talk about it to yourself, pray about it. See where you are all the time. Now, that's not adjusted gross income. That's a regular income. So thank you for listening, and God bless all of you. And when you evaluate yourself, freely evaluate yourself. Always be evaluating yourself. And don't forget the money part.